from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Coming up on Forum, the debate over changing California's three strikes law. 18 years ago, Californians overwhelmingly voted for three strikes, the law that sends someone convicted of a third felony to prison for 25 years to life, even if that third felony conviction was for a nonviolent crime. Now, Proposition 36 is on the ballot, and it would fundamentally change when and how that third strike gets called. Is it time to change three strikes, or would Californians be safer if the law stayed on the books the way it is? Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. In 1992, Mike Reynolds' 18-year-old daughter was killed by two men who were repeat offenders. Reynolds decided he would do everything he could to prevent similar tragedies. And so began the campaign for three strikes. 2 years later, thanks in part to Mike Reynolds' efforts, Californians overwhelmingly passed the three strikes law, a law which said that once you've committed two felonies, a third strike would send you back to prison for 25 years to life. But in the 18 years since its passage, one aspect of three strikes has remained controversial, the nature of the so-called triggering offense. Under three strikes, even a nonviolent felony can send someone with two strikes back to prison for a very long time. Now along comes Proposition 36, which says that the third strike provision only kicks in if that third offense is serious or violent. It also allows those currently serving third strike sentences for nonviolent crimes the opportunity to appeal for early release. But as with any ballot proposition, the details matter. And so in this hour of Forum, we want to take up those details and the debate. We're joined first by Mike Romano, who is a lecturer in law at the Stanford University Law School and founder and supervising attorney for the Stanford Three Strikes Project. Mr. Romano, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I want to just get straight the basics of this and some of the details, if we might. Tell us specifically again how the law would be changed if Proposition 36 is passed. What will it take for the three strikes provision to still be in effect?
Sure. So under current law, right now you can get a life sentence for almost any crime in California, and we're talking about possession of a joint of marijuana or petty theft or shoplifting, if you have two prior convictions for serious or violent crimes, which are defined by statute. So if you have two prior convictions for serious or violent crimes, and then you pick up any third new offense, you can get a life term. Under Proposition 36, which is on the ballot in November, the life sentence will only be triggered if the third crime is also serious or violent. Now, 36 preserves sentence enhancements for non-serious, non-violent third strike offenses, so somebody who picks up a petty theft will still get an enhanced sentence as being a repeat offender up to 6, 8, or 10 years, but they won't get a life term. That's the basics.
And define for us the meaning of the word serious and violent, because as I understand it, Proposition 36 would also keep in effect the possibility of someone being sent to prison for a very long time if that offense involves certain things such as drugs or firearms. Is that correct?
Yeah, so those are two separate questions. So the idea of serious or violent crimes, those are defined by statute, and there are lists in the penal code as to what qualifies as serious or violent, and those span everything from rape and murder down to purse snatch robberies and residential burglary. Those are all serious and violent crimes. Proposition 36 includes a couple of public safety safeguards to say that even if the crime qualifies as not serious nonviolent, meaning it's not on the list of serious or violent crimes, you can still get a life sentence if your crime involves, let's say, possession of a large amount of drugs, or if your crime involved a firearm. You'll still get a life sentence for those crimes even if they're nonviolent. There's another public safety provision in Proposition 36 that says even if your third strike is extremely petty, stealing a pair of socks or simple drug possession, you'll get a life sentence if your prior crimes are especially brutal. So rape, murder, child molestation, nobody who has ever committed one of these very bad crimes, rape, murder, child molestation, will get the benefit of Proposition 36, no matter how minor their third strike crime.
And one more aspect of it, if you would, which is the provision which allows people who are currently in prison because of a third strike violation the opportunity for early release. Who would be eligible for that, and how is that decision made?
Sure. So there are about 3,000 people who are currently in prison serving life sentences under California's three strikes law for minor crimes and who don't have one of these very serious prior convictions for rape, murder, and child molestation. These people would be eligible for a new reduced sentence, but they would only get the reduced sentence if a judge finds that they're no longer a risk to public safety. So if you're currently in prison, you're serving a life sentence for petty theft, you have a chance to go back before the judge who sentenced you, and that judge can either determine whether or not you're, you know, still a risk to the an unreasonable risk to public safety. If you are a risk to the community, your life sentence remains in place. If you're not, you'll be sentenced to double the ordinary sentence, which is about 6 or 8, 10 years.
Mike Romano, lecturer in law at the Stanford Law School, founder and supervising attorney of the Stanford Three Strikes Project. Mr. Romano, thanks for laying out the basics of Proposition 36.
Thanks.
Joining us as well now are George Gascon. He is the district attorney for the City and County of San Francisco. Mr. Gascon, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, David. Good morning.
And we're also joined by Michael Rushford, who is the president of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation, a nonprofit public interest law organization dedicated to the rights of crime victims. Mr. Rushford, thanks for being with us as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Mr. Rushford, first, you heard Mike Romano lay out the basics of Proposition 36, which sounds like it has a number of safeguards. So it's not sort of, you know, releasing people automatically from prison, nor automatically saying if you've committed a nonviolent crime as a third strike, you won't necessarily get a long sentence. What is your reaction to that, those safeguards, first of all? Why are those not sufficient in your mind?
Well, the biggest problem with Prop 36 is the removal of discretion for a district attorney and a judge who would have to agree to sentence an offender with two violent or serious priors who commits a third felony who they recognize as someone who is going to hurt a third person, who's going to commit another crime at some point in the future. District attorneys and judges both have access to probation reports, how these inmates have performed on supervision, things they did while they were in prison the last time, and who they're hanging out with now that they're free prior to be convicted of this third felony. Those kinds of information aren't necessarily something that occurs in the trial, but it is a judgment that the judge and the district attorney can make about what sentence they should receive. Now, I should point this out, that of the 8,000 or so inmates in California prisons, about 6% that are on a third strike, over 5,000 were there for a serious or violent third felony conviction. So there's around 3,000, 3,700 who would be eligible for resentencing. You are aware that California is now in the middle of a realignment program that was passed last year, and that the pressure is on state government to continue to relieve the prison of another few thousand inmates to match up with a Supreme Court order.
But just, and we'll get to that issue about
yeah.
the question of realignment and releasing more prisoners because of the Supreme Court concerns. But I want to make sure I understand your basic concern. You're saying that there is going to be less prosecutorial discretion and that these sorts of decisions will happen more automatically. Is that correct?
Well, when you don't allow the prosecutor and the judge, let's say the third felony is for a car theft. And let's say this defendant stole a lot of cars during his crime career, but committed an aggravated assault or an attempted murder and went to prison for that somewhere in the past as well. I would prefer, and I think most Californians would agree, for the judge and the DA, who are both elected, to use their judgment as to whether this person needs to have another chance to hurt a third person, to do a third violent or serious felony. That's a call I'd like the local people that I elect to make. This law would take that call away.
And let's bring District Attorney George Gascon for the City and County of San Francisco then into this conversation, because you're a big believer, I know, in prosecutorial discretion. So you're hearing Mr. Rushford make the argument that that would take that away from you.
Yeah. And, you know, let me start, David, by putting a little context for the audience. I have been in the law enforcement for over 30 years. I spent a significant portion of my life as a police officer, right, you know, rose all the way to the number two rank in the LAPD, very effective in lowering crime in L.A. Then I was a chief of police in Mesa, Arizona, for 3 years and had a tremendous impact. In fact, we lowered crime there by about 30%. And then I was a chief of police in San Francisco for a year and a half. And during my time as a chief of police, we lowered homicides and violent crime here to early 1960 levels. In fact, we went from about 100 homicides a year to 45 and 50 per year, 2 years in a row. So I say this to say that I'm not a soft on crime kind of guy, and I know how to make communities safe. And precisely because I believe that I have a tremendous amount of knowledge as to what makes communities safe and what do not, I support Prop 36. Let's look first of all at crime numbers. If we look at the crimes and we take the top three counties in the state that use the three-strike laws very aggressively, and we compare them to the three counties in the state that basically follow the Prop 36 model. So we take Riverside, Kern County, and Sacramento County, who use it very aggressively. And we look at crimes per 100,000. And we see that in these three counties, crime per 100,000, violent crime is 517 violent crimes per 100,000. And we look and there's 2,133 property crimes per 100,000. Now, we compare that to San Francisco, L.A., in Santa Clara, and we look at, we have violent crimes in this three counties is 500 per 100,000, and then we look at property crimes, and there is actually a tremendous disparity, is 1,356. So we know that even in California, the allegation that three strikes is making us safer does not really match the numbers.
But that actually gets at, again, this question of discretion, which I'd like you to respond to, because it illustrates how in San Francisco and L.A., three strikes has not been as aggressively pursued as some of the other counties you're outlining. And what we heard Mr. Rushford say is that you would now have less discretion under Prop 36. So respond to that part of the question.
So the problem is that the discretion often is not necessarily the best thing that we can use for public policy. And I believe that if we look at the over-reliance on incarceration in the state over the last 15 or 20 years, and we look at our actual crime numbers. In fact, if we were to compare our crime numbers with states like New York, that does not have the availability of three strikes, period. And we see that actually New York, a comparable state in terms of population and demographics, and their reductions in crime have been much greater than ours. We can see that from a public policy stance, when we are over-relying on incarceration, because frankly, a lot of this is driven by electoral politics, right? Is they want to get tough on crime, is the emotional appeal that often drives a lot of the decisions, are decisions that are not necessarily good for our community.
I want to pursue that, but just one more beat on this, which is, would you have less discretion if Proposition 36 is passed?
Well, I certainly would have less discretion because I would not be able to send a shoplifter to prison for 25 years to life. But I think that that is a good thing. I should not have that level of discretion.
All right, let's get into then the bigger issue of what keeps us safe, because in the end, that's, of course, what drove the vote 18 years ago and what people need to think about as they approach November. So Mike Rushford, when you hear District Attorney Gascon outline the fact that in counties like San Francisco and L.A., which have not used the three strikes provision as aggressively, the crime hasn't gone up. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think you can make comparisons between different, for instance, Stockton, the San Joaquin County, is not very aggressive, and their crime has gone up dramatically because they're on the drug corridor, the I-5 drug corridor. So location and what the culture is in that city and how they're enforcing for low-level crime all matter with regard to what happens. So I don't think you can make the comparison, but I also think that people deserve the amount of justice that they're willing to choose, and in San Francisco and Los Angeles and other places where it is not enforced aggressively, that's a good option. They should have that option. It gives every county a chance to try something different, different levels of discretion. I should add, I think last year we had 18 third strikers that were sent in, out of Sacramento County. I don't think that's excessive when you look at how many crimes are prosecuted in this county. Other counties like San Diego have had the same experience. I think DAs are very careful about using this discretion and focusing on very dangerous criminals that they simply agree with the judge should not be left on the street for.
But we also read these stories of people who wind up going back to prison for a very long time, whose third offense is something as simple as shoplifting. Does that make sense?
In the first couple of years that three strikes was enforced, there was some overuse of the discretion in some cases. But I should point out, guys like the pizza thief got out. They didn't serve their third strike and committed more felonies, by the way, after they were released. So these stories are from a long time ago. And again, that's only a very small percentage of criminals in our prisons are third strikers. The bulk are second strikers. And that was the main value of three strikes, is what happens to you when you commit a second violent or serious. The third is simply an award for a career where you absolutely never learned your lesson. And again, it is used with great discretion. We're only talking about 3,000 out of 134,000 inmates in state prison that have been in there for a nonviolent third felony. Very few of those had a pot, had a joint of marijuana, or stole a golf club.
And George Gaston, your thoughts on that? Because those are the stories that draw our attention. Doesn't make sense to be in life in prison if your third felony has been for the joint of marijuana. We're hearing Mike Rushford say those are exceptions. Those happened a long time ago. They're not the norm.
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, if we can statistically agree that the way there are three strikes current configuration doesn't make us any safer. And I think statistically we can show that there is certainly a linkage between safety and the usage of this law. Then we have to move to the next level and we have to say, is this really fair? Is it proportionate? And I believe that the majority of people, and certainly majority of Californians, do not want to be associated with something that, as a public policy statement, is inherently unfair, is inherently disproportionate. I don't care if it's one, if it's 10. If we're sending a person to life in prison for a minor shoplifting offense or for minor possession of drugs, I think that that disproportionality is something that the state should not be allowed to do. And I don't think it's something that we as a people in the state want to be associated with. This is about proportionality. You know, it may appear to be a very small number of people, right? But for those people that happen to be in custody for 25 years to life, it is 100% of a problem to them. So I think that that argument that it's a small number of people flies in the face of fairness and proportionality. I think that when we look at the cost, the economic cost of this, the reality is that this is disproportionately costly with people that really are not necessarily making our communities less safe. So we have to look at this and be much broader in our approach than just simply saying, well, this only, you know, it's only impacting 3,000 people. Well, you know, guess what? The 3,000 people, there are 3,000 families, there are sons, daughters, neighbors. I mean, there's a lot of people that get impacted by this.
George Gascon, the district attorney for the city and county of San Francisco. On the economics, as I understand it, Mike Rushford, the legislative analyst estimates that there would be some $70 million in savings in prison costs if Proposition 36 were to go into effect. Speak to the economics of this.
I think that we have to factor in what happens if we're not sending felons that the district attorney and the judge used to have the option to send to prison, if we are not sending them away for a long period of time and they come back out and they recommit. and also the effect. And I should point out that when when the Three Strikes Initiative passed, we had the Los Angeles County Sheriff speak to my board about a month after it passed. He said every inmate in his 25,000 inmate LA County jail knew everything they needed to know about three strikes. It was the main topic of conversation among the inmates. They knew how many strikes they had. They knew how many they needed to get 25 to life. Obviously, the deterrent aspect of that matters. And if you take away that option for the DA and the judge, it's going to be on the street, and it's going to encourage more crime. And I got to, if I can just backtrack for a minute, I have a problem with feeling sorry for a felon who has committed two violent or serious crimes and then steals a car or beats somebody up, who is now in prison for 25 to life because the DA and the judge thought he was too dangerous. I really don't feel sorry for that guy. He has proven that after two rounds in prison, he still has not stopped committing felonies. And it bothers me that somebody is willing to take a chance on whether this guy is going to rape or beat to death somebody else on a third shot because they feel sorry for him, because it's so bad that he has to go away for a long period of time for committing a third felony.
George Gascone, are you asking us to feel sorry for that person?
No, absolutely not. You know, I'm asking us to be thoughtful. I'm asking us to look at the science, to look at the numbers behind the stuff. You know, we keep going back to trying to appeal to emotions. The reality is that when we do a thoughtful risk assessment of the people that we're talking about, it is very unlikely that those people are going to go out and rape or murder. In fact, they're less likely to do so than other people that are in prison that are not three strikers. So, you know, it's always very easy to come up to the emotional level. You know, you're going to let a potential rapist or murderer go out, and clearly none of us wants to do that. And certainly I don't. I have invested my entire life in making communities safer. The reality is that there are no facts behind that kind of assessment. In fact, I continue to go back to looking at states that do not even have three strikes, that are demographically very comparable to us, and they have experienced more significant crime reductions, and they're safer than we are.
Tell me why, George Gascone, I'd be safer than I am today if Prop 36 is passed.
I tell you what, you would be safer. First of all, we're going to have additional funding available that can be invested in communities in a different way, number one. Number two, if three strikes prosecution and putting somebody in prison for life in prison is taking space that could be better utilized to put people that really are violent and people that are making our communities unsafer. The other part of this, too, is that when we put that three-strike umbrella on people that really are not dangerous to us in the way that other people might be, what we're doing is we're creating this whole ambience within communities of unfairness, targeting certain communities, and I think that actually makes those communities less safe, and it impacts all of us.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll pursue that and how we know and how we can predict or not predict those sorts of questions. When we return, we're also going to hear the voice of a sheriff on this. Bob Doyle, sheriff of Marin County, will join us, and we'll hear his point of view as well. And we'd like to hear yours. What are your thoughts about the current three strikes law? Do you think it's time to change it, or do you think we're better off keeping it the way it is? Here's the numbers if you want to join our conversation. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. If you'd like to weigh in on the three strikes provision, you can email us your thoughts at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your questions or thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website as well. 866-733-6786 is the number. District Attorney George Gascone, Michael Rushford, and Sheriff Bob Doyle will join us when we return. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the three strikes law in California passed some 18 years ago. Now voters can change it if they so desire. Proposition 36 will be on the ballot this November, and we're taking that topic up for debate in this hour of Forum. 866-733-6786 is the number if you'd like to join our conversation with Michael Rushford, who is the president of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation, a nonprofit public interest law organization dedicated to the rights of crime victims, George Gascon, district attorney here in the city and county of San Francisco. And joining us as well now is Sheriff Bob Doyle, who is the sheriff for Marin County. Sheriff Doyle, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Give us your perspective as a law enforcement. You've been hearing, I know, the discussion to date. Why, as a sheriff, do you want to see Proposition 36 defeated and keep the current version of the three strikes law on the books?
You know, I like to preface my comments just by saying from law enforcement, it's just not a knee-jerk reaction to being opposed, because Marin County has one of the lowest crime rates in the state. We lead the state in pre- and post-trial alternatives. But I believe that the three strikes has acted as a deterrent. I think that statistics show that it has reduced violent crime pretty significantly. And I think that, you know, after the initial years of maybe some abuse by some counties, that I think the playing field has been leveled. And as some of the other speakers have said, I don't think that we're seeing people going to prison on a third strike for stealing a piece of pizza. But that being said, Prop 36 focuses on the third strike as opposed to what the person did previously in the first two strikes. And so I think that, you know, in law enforcement, it's our, you know, it's our job to provide public protection, and I think that, you know, the three strikes does offer that. I think it does make people safer. I think people feel safer. I think if you talk to inmates in county jails, and I have talked to inmates in county jails, they're well aware of what it means and the time that they're going to spend, and I think to some it does act as a deterrent.
I want to pursue the deterrent question with District Attorney Gascon, but before I do that, you said that you think the evidence is clear that three strikes has a reduced violent crime. How do you know that? What can you point to as evidence of that?
I know that from looking at some studies, and I think there was a position paper by the California District Attorneys Association that said that violent crime, you know, has been reduced significantly, somewhere in the 15 to 17%. Homicides are down, property crimes are down, arson, those kinds of things, and other forms of theft.
They're down, but how do we know it's because of three strikes?
Well, I think that when you look at the statistics starting from back in 1994, I don't have the study in front of me, but I think that there is some indication that three strikes has done that, especially in violent crime.
Yeah. District Attorney Gascon, on that point.
Well, you know, the problem with that is that if we were to analyze the reduction in crime in California and put it against New York, again, I have to go back to New York, stay very similarly situated to us in terms of demographics, the size of the population, their crime has gone down more than ours has as a state during the same period of time, and they do not have three strikes. Again, if we now look internally within California, and we look at counties that are very aggressively using the law and those that haven't, we see that actually the counties that haven't, like San Francisco, Santa Clara, and L.A., actually have had greater reductions. In fact, in property crimes, our reductions are significantly more. We're going from 2,133 crimes per 100 residents to 1,356. So the argument that is reducing crime is hollow because it doesn't stand the scrutiny of comparison with other places.
And one quick follow-up, if you would, please, on the deterrence question. We heard both Michael Rushford and Sheriff Doyle make the argument, and it sounds persuasive, that they have talked with inmates in county jails. Everyone's aware of their strike count. And like any good batter, they know what they need to do to avoid getting a third strike. So what about that deterrent effect?
Look, we all have different experiences. Okay, I have 30 years in law enforcement. I've worked in the largest police department in the state, the third largest in the country, probably one of the places with the most, crime that you can deal with. In my experience, and talking to guys on the street, and I've done it all, right? I've been a gang officer, I've been a gang sergeant, I've been a captain, a lieutenant, I've done it all. I have never seen guys on the street tell me that they're thinking about the strike count before they're going to commit a robbery or before they're going to do a drive-by. That's just not really how life works on a daily basis out there. These are not people that think that much.
866-733-6786 if you'd like to join our conversation. Matt in San Jose gets us started. Matt, go ahead.
Hi. I have a little bit of experience with the three strikes law. I, in fact, faced my third strike about 8 or 9 years ago. I'm in one of those counties you talked about that I think is not giving people the third strike as much, Santa Clara County. And I should probably mention that I'm not convicted of violent crimes. I always had what were called wobblers, which are like first-degree burglaries. And so I ended up not getting a third strike, though I faced it. I served about 7 years, and now I'm doing really well. But I wanted to say that the deterrent factor wasn't really present for me when I had two strikes. It was more present after having faced actual life in prison. That was what was life-changing for me.
Well, Matt, if I might interject, how are you facing life in prison if you weren't threatened by the third strike provision?
No, what I'm talking about is I went to prison the first time when I was 19 and received two strikes on that particular instance. And I wasn't necessarily deterred at that time. Maybe it's because I was too young. Maybe it's because I only did a year and a half in prison. But when I then got rearrested again at the age of 25 and faced a third strike, that's when it became a deterrent. And it serves as a deterrent for me today.
So just to be clear, it sounds like the third strike provision did function as a kind of deterrent for you and helped you turn your life around. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I've turned my life around. I'm attending UC Berkeley now, and so I'm doing things considerably different than what I was doing before, which was, you know, I was addicted to drugs and stealing things, property crime.
Matt, thank you. Thanks for telling your story. Thanks for what you're doing, and best of luck to you. Hope you continue to do well. Matt, thanks for the comment. George Gascon, you heard someone who says it did have that sort of deterrent effect.
You know, I think it's wonderful that it worked for this young man, and I'm sure that it has worked for others. But I don't think that you can base public policy on you know, just some anecdotal information about isolated cases. Again, I think that you need to look at the numbers in large scale in order to base our public policy. And when you do so, the evidence is overwhelmingly clear that the way that we're doing three strikes today is not necessarily making us any safer. To the contrary, in some cases, actually, arguably, you have higher levels of crime. So while it may be, you know, the case for this young man, and I'm sure for others, and I think it's wonderful, by the way, and I congratulate him for that, I think that that is not enough to you know, to have an entire state criminal justice system working on those bases.
Daniel writes in, wants to get back to this question of discretion. He writes, I've always been confused about three strikes. Aren't juries not allowed to consider past offenses when judging cases? Why should sentencing be exempt from this caveat? So Michael Rushford, you want to take that on the question of whether or not juries are allowed certain kinds of information, how much discretion they have in this, or is this strictly a judicial and prosecutorial decision?
Well, the decision as to whether or not to go for the third strike is prosecutorial, whether the crime is going to be, the DA is going to push for that sentence. So that discretion going in exists, and the jury finds the defendant guilty, and the judge in these cases, the judge and the district attorney and the defense attorney argue over what the sentence will be. But the question really is, and I think this is important, that we're allowing the people we elect to do this job to make that judgment for us, as opposed to having some kind of one-size-fits-all and paying the consequences. And I want to go back to something that the district attorney mentioned earlier about the science now and being able to identify low-risk criminals. It wasn't very long ago that John Philip Gardner was released from prison as a low-risk sex offender after serving 5 years for raping a 13-year-old girl. He was put on a GPS monitor and had monitoring supposedly in San Diego. While he was under that kind of supervision, he murdered 14-year-old Amber Dubois. another year later, he murdered 17-year-old Chelsea King. Also in 2009, he raped a 23-year-old girl. So our skills at determining what is low risk are not very good. And this is somebody that slipped through the cracks, and there are two dead girls to pay for it. Now, I don't know how many dead girls there need to be before we keep that discretion so that that DA and that judge can make the call that we don't want to let this guy out in a few years because he just stole a car. Look at his priors. Look at who he's been hanging out with, who he's been dealing with, the kinds of things he's been doing, and then they make that judgment. You want to take that away, you're going to have more of those Amber Dubois type murders.
Yeah, George Gascon, that's the argument that I don't know if there is a commercial that's been made out of the argument that Michael Rushford just described, but you can easily imagine it. And I'd like to hear you respond.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, and I think that it's actually a good case to have a discussion on. That case occurred under our current three strikes law. And I think it highlights, number one, the reality that there are some things that three strikes can do and other things that won't do, no matter whether it's currently configured or whether it gets reformed according to Prop 36. And I think, Michael is absolutely right that, that when we're dealing with human beings, that nothing is ever 100% for sure. But the reality is that we have to go and look at the what we know today about how to evaluate future behavior based on past behavior, current situations. And I believe that when we do so, we are getting better and better at evaluating what is the likelihood of risk. And I think we also have to admit that even under the current configuration, we will have this horrible, tragic cases like this individual that he mentioned, and we need to continue to get better at how to evaluate that. But three strikes isn't going to correct that problem.
Angela in Sacramento has our next comment. Angela, go ahead, please.
Hi there. I like what the gentleman said about perspective. I'm a social worker, and I am definitely for three strikes. I think we have to look at that it's not necessarily, they're caught on the third strike, but they could have done a lot more crimes. And drugs increases domestic violence risk, child abuse, animal abuse. So that is just my comment.
Angela, thanks. Thanks for adding your comment to it.
I'd like to make a comment. I think Michael's right about the
Sheriff Doyle.
Yeah, having the ability to have options. I mean, I think that George is right. I mean, we can't set public policy based on emotion, but there's also a thing called community standard and what the community expects of the criminal justice system and what they expect from sentencing. And obviously that's different in San Francisco than it is in a rural county.
Well, speak to that if you would, Sheriff Doyle, because there's a certain irony that I'm sure some listeners are wondering about at the moment, that here you are, sheriff in Marin County, not exactly the murder capital of the world,
right?
Opposed to changing three strikes. And we have not only George Gascon, the DA in San Francisco, but Steve Cooley, the Republican DA in Los Angeles, who in much higher crime areas, saying the three strikes needs to be changed.
Well, I agree. And I let me add that it's living and working in Marin County, it's near perfect every day for me. But I think that, those options need to be available. I mean, I think people in the state of California know that everything is not exactly the same thing in every county. And I think that prosecutors need to have that ability and judges need to have that, that discretion. And there is a community standard and there's different expectations in different parts of the state. And I think that, leaving three strikes the way it is, that provides that avenue and that approach, for the criminal justice system. I mean, in Marin, like I said, we have the lowest incarceration rate in the state of California and the most pre- and post-trial alternatives, so I'm not a knee-jerk, throw everybody in prison kind of person. But I do think it has been a deterrent, and I think that the discretion is what's the most important thing. I think that the aberrations occurred a long time ago, and they don't anymore. And I just hearken to imagine the 4,000 or 5,000 people who come up for you know, resentencing and what that would mean, because, you know, this proposition only focuses on the last strike. It doesn't focus on their criminal history.
And Sheriff Doyle, I'm going to hold you there. And thanks so much for adding your perspective to our conversation this morning. Appreciate you being with us. We heard from a social worker a moment ago, who is very much in favor of keeping three strikes as it is. Some other perspectives being written in. Brian writes, if we don't attempt to rehabilitate on the first or second strike, we've failed crime victims as well as our state and society. Instead of addressing that, we've chosen to warehouse those we failed once, then not surprisingly, they reoffend. And Mary Lee writes in, we now spend more money on prisons than schools. We must stop the schools being prep schools for prison. The current three strikes law is crazy. George Gascon, you wanted to make a point.
Well, I do. I think that, you know, when we're talking about community standards, and I wholly support, you know, Bob's concept that, you know, each community has their own standards. But I think that has to be done in the context of what the impact is to the greater community, right? And when you look at counties that, you know, disproportionately send people to prison in cases that perhaps they shouldn't or they should be taking a second look, the reality is that counties like Bob's County, Marin County, or my county are actually the direct contributors or supporters of those counties that are exercising that discretion that arguably follows their community standards. So, you know, we're actually, people in San Francisco, quite frankly, are often paying for the over-incarceration rates of some of this other counties. So it's a much more complex and much more nuanced than that. If we're going to have those counties just pay 100% for what they do, you know, I'm still not going to say that I would not support Prop 36, but I can see that argument taking better hold. But I just don't see it as currently we're financing our criminal justice system.
Noah in San Francisco has our next question or observation. Noah?
I think the whole question about three strikes is really a question about recidivism. And it seems to me like deterrence without rehabilitation is only getting, you know, it's offering more of a stick without a carrot. And my other point is that I actually do have a problem with elected officials making decisions about the justice system because they already have a lot of control over people's lives, and I don't really see a lot of checks and balances over the use of the three strikes law, and I think you know, discretion in the hands of someone who has control over someone's life is something that should be used very carefully.
Noah, thank you. Yeah, thanks for the observation. On the first point that Noah makes, Michael Rushford, about recidivism, one of the things that George Gascon said earlier is that if we're able to save some money, and the legislative analyst says that Prop 36 would save about $70 million a year in prison costs, so that money can be used in the community in a way that will address some of our criminal justice problems. What's your response to that?
Well, I don't think that rehabilitation is highly overrated. And there has been a lot of money spent in this state and nationally to identify programs that work. And if there was one that was very effective, we'd all be using it.
That sounds a lot like lock them up, throw away the key.
No, I think that one of the differences between folks who are into the treatment model and those who understand that essentially we're incapacitating a repeat criminal when we put him behind bars is that at some point you lose this person, and it's generally after age 15, 16, they're gone. Now, it's great when you get the stories from, like, the call-in, the fellow that third strike scared him enough to where he went straight, and he got older and thought about it, which is helpful. But the idea that we should spend the money in community programs for three-time losers who are on drugs because we're going to make them better is kind of naive. And when we've done this in the past, we've had very bad results.
Yeah, George Gascon, rehabilitation overrated and naive?
I think it's neither. I think if you look, for instance, at our state, you know, where we're hovering right around 70% reoffending or recidivism rate, and we compare ourselves to other states that have much more aggressive intervention programs, and they're somewhere in the 40-50% or even below that, I think that, you know, I have to disagree
Do we know what works? Do we know what works?
Well, we know what doesn't work. Okay, we know for sure that taking low-level offenders and mixing them with high-level offenders doesn't work because it actually increases the likelihood of the low-level offender becoming himself or herself a much more serious offender. So we know that that is a case. We know that within the treatment community and within the counseling and rehabilitation things, we know that there are some things that work. We know that there are some things that do not work.
Such as?
I can tell you, for instance, we know that if we have someone that is severely mentally ill and has severe drug addiction, we cannot leave them alone in the street and expect that they are not going to have problems. We know that we have to have very close supervision. But we also see that when we provide that very close supervision, we actually see improvement and we see people fixing themselves. So I think that there is a lot that we know. And for sure, we know that just looking the other way and leaving people unattended is not a good thing. We also know that just we cannot incarcerate our way out of this problem. I mean, look, I was born in Cuba. Okay, Cuba is a very safe country. Okay, you can go to prison in Cuba for a very long period of time for a very minor offense. I would not want to live in Cuba, and I would not want the United States to become another Cuba. You know, we have to put proportionality here. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we could incarcerate everybody that we thought that was a risk to us. We could not afford it socially. Certainly, we cannot afford it economically. And that's the problem that we're facing today.
Nicole writes in with something I'd like to hear you both comment on that we have not gotten to yet. Important question. Nicole writes, I'm a social worker, and I've long been concerned with the social justice implications that the three strikes law has on communities of color. Can your guest speak to the racial makeup of individuals who have been sentenced to 25 years to life for a third strike offense? Also, how many are young people who are third strikers? What about that, George Gascon? Does it have a disproportionate effect on communities of color?
There is no question about it, and that's part of the problem, right? If you come from an affluent background and you can afford to have very good legal defense very early on, or quite frankly, you're placed in a neighborhood and a setting that even if you're committing some offenses, you're not going to receive the same attention from law enforcement that you will if you live in a socially disadvantaged community, you are going to have the opportunity to mature, grow out of a lot of the things that young people do without facing the same consequences that you will if you happen to be African-American, for instance, or Latino and living in a poor community.
Michael Rushford, on that point.
I think that as long as we see certain minorities, for instance, we obviously reverse discrimination against Asians because we have virtually none on death row, very few, and they are very rarely anywhere close to standards for other ratios for other racial groups in the United States. There are 7 times more felonies committed in urban black communities, and 90% of their victims are other blacks. If you want to go to the Los Angeles morgue, just count up how many non-black victims there are piled up, and they're being killed by other black people. Our society has failed those populations, but we certainly shouldn't give up protecting them the best we can by weakening our sentencing laws so that there will be more black victims. There is a lot more that we should be doing, but to use racial disparity when you've got high populations committing the bulk of the crime is just silly. Should we not enforce the law in order to keep everything even? I think that's just it denies that population protection, and they deserve it.
You know, the problem is that this is a much more complicated issue than just simply saying that we're denying them protection by not over-incarcerating that population. I can tell you that many people in that community will give you the other side of that argument, is that we're incarcerating people for very low-level offenses when they start very young, and we actually train them in how to be criminals, and we're creating a vacuum within those communities where we remove the male role model, and that creates further problems for the next generation. The reality is, again, look, we can get into all this emotional arguments, but when we compare ourselves, we do thoughtful comparisons about public safety numbers, and we compare places where three strikes is being aggressively enforced and places where there is not, or places where they don't even have three strikes, the numbers do not support the argument that three strikes as it currently configured is making us safer.
Let's hear one more caller, Phil in Burlingame. Phil?
Hi, one of the problems I think that a lot of people had with three strikes is if all three strikes were nonviolent. So my question is, you know, how many of the three strikes convictions currently there are all three nonviolent? And, you know, what's been done to take care of that problem in the original law? And yeah. I'll take my answer off the air.
Phil, thanks. Michael Rusher.
Violent and serious crimes are the seven majors identified by the FBI. Armed robbery, residential burglary, with 30% of residential burglaries, as I should add, result in injury or death to somebody. And other crimes like that, rape, aggravated assault, where you beat somebody so badly they go to the hospital. Property crimes generally are not included in that mix. We're talking violent and serious crimes, residential burglary being one of the exceptions. As I said before, of the 8,000 third strikers in state prison, over 5,000 are there for three violent or serious crimes.
Hmm. We just have a moment or two left, so I want to conclude by asking you a question I raised earlier, and each, if you would please, just give me your best 20 seconds or so on this. Why would we be safer, Michael Rusherford, if Prop 36 is defeated and the current three strikes law remains in place?
Because we would be placing the responsibility for taking the most dangerous criminals off the street, irregardless of what their last offense was, based on their record and what local law enforcement knows about them. That discretion gives us a better level of safety than we're going to get from a one-size-fits-all that simply leaves these third strikers that commit a nonviolent crime in the community, and we take a chance.
And George Gascon, why would we be safer if three strikes has changed and Prop 36 has passed?
I think we'll be safer because we'll be able to create more space in our prisons to put violent offenders in prison. I think that we will have additional funding that could be used for other services. I think it will give us the opportunity to be much more thoughtful about the way that we apply the three strikes law and make sure that it applies to violence and not nonviolent people.
George Gascon, the District Attorney for the City and County of San Francisco. Mr. Gascon, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And Michael Rusherford, President of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation, a nonprofit public interest law organization dedicated to the rights of crime victims. Mr. Rusherford, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Earlier today, we also heard from Mike Romano, lecturer in law at the Stanford Law School, founder and supervising attorney of the Three Strikes Project, and Sheriff Bob Doyle, the sheriff in Marin County. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi with additional assistance on this program from Suki Lewis. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. Dan Zoll is our senior editor and Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.